Lots of surprises today on the Wells Tech Podcast. We continue our review of the book presentation Zen and preparing for presentations without technology. Also, we have our first unboxing of the Google Chromebook. You're not going to want to miss that. Lots of great listener feedback and just a fun show in general. Stay tuned. This is Wells Tech, a podcast on the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Welcome to the Wells Tech Podcast, episode 262 for Tuesday, November 13th, 2012. My name is Martin Spriggs, and this is a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. And to help me find those intersections, as usual, from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Happy to be joining you for the 262nd time. And what a privilege it is to be able to talk about tech and ministry and to see all the changes that are going on around us every single day and to dream about the ways that we can use those technology improvements to further the gospel.
Yep. Good stuff. That's, you can't beat our jobs. I look forward to Tuesday every week because we get to talk about cool stuff, new stuff, old stuff, or maybe even most importantly, how to use the old and new stuff to spread the gospel. The topic for the day is our monthly focus on a book. And you got yours, and I've got mine. Presentation Zen by Gar Reynolds, one of the foremost experts on dynamic presentations. This is the text, quote unquote, the textbook that I use for a class that I teach for MLC called Dynamic Classroom Presentations. I've read it a number of times, and we're reading it together. And we are on Chapter 3, which is kind of the low-tech side of this book, even though we're talking about this on a technology podcast. This is entitled Planning Analog, and that means that you don't necessarily need to use your computer.
Yikes. I don't know if we can talk about that or not, but...
Once we work through it, I think you'll agree that there's probably some value in not turning on the computer before you get down to work.
Sometimes it's good to take a step away from the computer, huh? Maybe just slow down a little bit. I know when I'm on the computer and I'm doing a presentation, I feel this urgency to just plop some stuff in a slide and get it done. Mm-hmm. And so maybe taking a step away, as Gar proposes in this chapter, is a better way to kind of center yourself, get yourself into the message that you're trying to convey to your audience, get it real clarified in your mind before you start spitting out slides about it.
Yep. One thing that I also talk about in some of my productivity seminars is you need to plan time to think. And this is really a part of this as well, where you do need to take a step back, think about the big picture, and before you're almost constrained or forced into getting something down on a slide or putting bullets together or selecting pictures that go with the bullets or, you know, multimedia, whatever, look at the big picture and kind of almost in your mind and in an analog way by writing it down, good old paper and pencil or, you know, post-it notes or whatever, storyboard it. So where am I going to start? What am I thinking about? Or what are we doing in the middle? You know, how are we going to conclude it? What's the storyline look like? What's the big picture? And he makes a great point here, especially as you're thinking about you know, that singular focus and trying to leave your audience with just a couple key points. You almost have to take this big step back and do this planning step, or you're going to dive right in. And I think you get diverted sometimes when you jump into PowerPoint or Keynote or whatever, just by the tools and the technology that's available. And, you know, you may not stay as focused as you need to be.
And I think it's good to be unstructured during that time, to not be constrained maybe linearly to get through a presentation point by point, but rather maybe with a whole post-it note approach or whatever it is, writing down everything possible around the topic and then, you know, physically moving things around and organizing them in such a way that your presentation begins to take life.
Mm-hmm. What you just described, Sally, sounds like actually a technology tool that both you and I use for this kind of thing. So we're kind of, I don't think we're at polar opposites to this chapter and its focus, but I think there is maybe for those of us that want to stay kind of in the technology space to do our brainstorming, that's a mind map, right?
Absolutely. And yeah, if you are a mind map user, over time that becomes the way you think, where it's kind of all over the board, and then you can drag and drop and organize things within a mind map. So not so analog. We do have a digital component to planning when we use mind maps, but I think it is very free form mm-hmm. and open to that whole brainstorming concept where, you know, don't be intimidated. Don't feel like you're going to make a mistake or whatever. Type it out there, put it out there. And the topics become these little blurb kind of things that you can drag and drop anywhere you want in that mind map space.
Yeah, there's a it's a very different paradigm than the traditional outlining approach, which is what PowerPoint and Keynote and some of those things kind of force you in. What's the first slide? What's the second slide? What's the third slide? When you use a mind mapping tool, or you go doing totally analog with Post-it notes or whiteboarding or whatever, it's the same concept. You're really just throwing stuff out. You know, an idea here, an idea there. They may be disconnected. They may be something that you never even pursue, and that's part of it too. So that you're not creating a slide that ultimately you're never going to use. You're just throwing out an idea that, you know, may have some merit, may not. And when you look at it in the big picture, or when you compare it to all the other stuff that you wrote down, you'll say, well, that's not as important. You know, that's a tangent, or maybe that's not worth pursuing, or maybe I don't even have time to do that, which you're really not going to have that ability to step back and take a look at if you're just starting in and diving into the presentation. You may spend time on a number of different slides that ultimately have no real value in the overall big picture.
Yeah, I do like the digital solution there, just because things can be saved easier than mm-hmm. if you create it on paper. It seems like if you create it on paper or whiteboard, you're going to end up wanting a picture of that or a digital version of that that you can then turn into whatever you
process
ultimate.
There, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for me, I'm definitely a mind map girl, but I think, you know, there's power in some of the analog tools as well.
Yeah.
But in addition to focusing on the tools and, you know, that analog component, the rest of this chapter also gets into some really great questions, mm-hmm. Questions that you want to consider as you're doing this, you know, offline or whatever version of brainstorming that you're doing. And he listed a whole bunch of them, like how much time do you have? What is your venue like? You know, who's the audience and what's their background? What are they expecting of me? Just some really great kind of core questions to, you know, yeah, I'm speaking on social media or whatever it is I'm speaking on, but I need to know all these things going into it. If they're, you know, all teenagers who are using social media totally all the time, then my speech is going to be different than if they're over 70 and a little bit scared to stick their toe in the water or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, knowing all those kind of things, what do I want them to do? What is the, you know, what is the outcome I'm expecting from this presentation? And, you know, what's the purpose of it? And is there a story? There's just some really great thought-provoking questions in this chapter that I think are helpful in that brainstorming mode.
Yeah, and then the ever popular, you know, what's the elevator speech? If you had to restate what your point is, you know, could you say it in, you know, 30 seconds, 60 seconds? And that's a good part of the planning process, too. What's the big idea? What's the single point that if they don't walk away with this in their heads, then the presentation's been a failure? You know, those kinds of questions. He also talks about really the key three legs of the presentation stool. There are three things that should be present in most presentations. One of those is, of course, the slide that you're building, so the visual aid that goes along with what you're saying. The second thing are speaker notes, those things that are your cue cards that'll help you through this. So when you're building slides, and we talked about this concept last time when we were reviewing chapter 2 and also I think chapter 1, keeping it simple so your slides are not filled with a lot of bullets, not filled with a lot of text. It's very hard for somebody to listen and to read at the same time. So you don't want to confuse them that way. So less is more on a slide. So if you don't have all those bullet points written out on your slide, how are you going to remember what to say? That's where speaker notes come in. And PowerPoint and Keynote and a lot of those tools have great ways to fill in those speaker notes. Or you can just put them on a separate piece of paper. It doesn't matter. And then the third leg of the stool is a handout. What's a leave behind? If your slides are just kind of visual aids and pictures, they're not going to be all that helpful by themselves. So you want to give them something after you're gone to remind them, what this thing was all about and maybe some more detail that you went into that isn't captured on a particular slide. So those are the three important components to every presentation.
And let's just talk about and zero in on that handout component now, Martin, and say right off the bat that if you print out your slides to give them as notes,
Doesn't count. You failed.
Yeah, that's not the way to go. And of course, your slides are going to be a lot different after completing this book. They aren't going to be the detailed information that they're looking for. As a receiver of presentations, I want to make sure that I have, the websites that are talked about or the resources that are talked about. I mean, that's important to me. I don't want to sit there and enjoy this and then go home and have nothing to show for it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the taking notes and having that pressure takes away from the receiver's ability to enjoy and absorb the presentation. So what you want to do is reassure them that you've captured the information they need and they can relax and, be engaged in your presentation. And they need a lot of detail and thing. You need to put time into those handouts that you want to give them.
Yep. So that can be a traditional, printed piece of paper or series of pieces of paper. That can be a textbook, for instance, if you are a teacher. So they've got the reference material there and your presentation is just picking out the key points, things that you maybe want them to remember. Or for you and I, Sally, one thing that we use a lot is our friend Digo. Just putting together a list of resources. And one neat thing about Digo is that you can highlight and annotate and share those as well in your list, as we do on our Digo list for our Wells Tech listeners too. You can go to our list and see exactly the relevant points of a link that we thought was worth reading. So rather than the whole article, we're zeroing in on a paragraph or two. So that's what I use now for most of my presentations. If I'm going to leave something behind, I leave a link and says, I tell them right up front, this is the only thing you need to write down. If you want to get access to all the sites we're visiting, all the things we're really talking about, all the key points, this is where you need to go. And done.
Certainly appropriate for the teachers in our audience or the pastors who teach classes in our audience that they could use those kind of resources as well. And, maybe they're thinking, yeah, you guys present on technology. There's lots of websites you want to share links to, but you could have a web page where you typed up your notes as well and just share a link via Digo to your written notes on a web page. So, I mean, there's lots of nuances that can make it easy for the audience. And then, also have a takeaway, something they can save on their list of links or whatever and reference 6 months from now, not just right at the moment of the presentation, like a piece of paper, tends to get lost or whatever. I know I do this when I teach classes for MLC. I always give them a link list for the class. And that way, when the MLC course is shut down and they no longer have access to all the resources in the course, they still have the link list on Digo that we worked with in the class. So very good tip for educators as well.
Cool way to do that is just start a blog. And whenever you're doing a presentation, it's a blog post. And so you're linking to that and your Digo links can go, to different locations there. The neat thing about a blog is it's searchable too. So if it's extensive material and you've got other links in the blog, they can search on those and they've always got access to that. So, and they can print it out if they want.
Awesome ideas. So yep. I like the tone of this chapter, the fact that you need to take a step away and think through your goals for your presentation. And I think by doing that, putting together great handouts, you know, really understanding what your audience needs, you're going to understand your material so much better. You know, there's probably like an old adage that you never learn something until you have to teach it yourself or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to know your material. You can present well if you're confident about the material that you're presenting. And this, you know, step back and brainstorming and really getting close to the material is a huge step in that process.
Yep. Take some time. And, you know, when I teach this course for MLC, that's one of the things we talk about, that this is not an easy thing. It's not, I think teachers, you know, and pastors, are time constrained. There's a lot of things to do, and this takes some extra effort. But ultimately, if you don't take the time and you give a substandard presentation, then you've really wasted not only your time, but you've wasted your audience's time as well, your class's time too.
Right. So if you're going to do it well. Do it the right way.
That's what my mama said. All right. Let's move on, Sally, to ministry resources and some good news coming out of Lugus.
That's right. I'm going to switch to a screen share, hopefully. But yes, Lugus 5 was released this past week, a brand new version of Lugus, and they've improved things. There's a video on their website that you can watch if you want to get a quick overview of what's new in Lugus. They're touting that they have a timeline so you can see, you know, the Bible all the way through present times.
Kind of catching up to the Globe Bible in that respect. They've got a cool timeline. Mm-hmm.
You can actually search on clauses. So they show an example of the subject is God and the verb is to love. So you can get searches a lot more detailed that way. They have Bible facts, a sermon starter guide, topic guides, and a Bible Sense lexicon. So lots of new features in Lugus 5. I'd be really curious if any of our listeners have taken the plunge and upgraded, and what kind of things they're finding are positive, or maybe things that are a drawback with the new upgrade. We'd love to hear from you.
Cool. Very nice.
All right. Some news in tech as well. And I know you're going to like this one, Martin. It's about our favorite website, Pinterest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's some news out of Pinterest that was pretty exciting.
Do you tell.
Yes. And it's that Pinterest is now offering secret boards. So before now, everything that you pinned on Pinterest was to a particular board, and those boards were publicly accessible. People didn't even have to have a login on the Pinterest site to see your boards. But now, as you scroll down your Pinterest account, you have the ability to add up to 3 secret boards. So these would be boards that only you could see, or you can select to have it shared with someone. You can also invite other people to pin with you. But basically allowing you to, you know, pin things for your own use as opposed to public viewing. So there's a new feature. It's only available on these 3 secret boards that they put on your account, where you can turn on and off whether the board is secret. So after you create it and you've pinned to it for a while, if you decide you want to make the board public, you could come in and toggle a switch and the board could be publicly accessible. But as a default, they're giving you these 3 locations where you can have 3 boards for organizing all those things you want to pin, Martin, in secret.
Well, apparently our Wells Tech Pinterest account has no secrets. We're wide open because we have no secret boards set up. But
no.
Is this a beta tool, or is it basically ready for – have you tried it?
I have. I'm using it on my personal account, and it works just fine. I just set it up so I could see how it worked, basically. They rolled it out to everyone. There was a blog announcement, and they also emailed it to all the account holders. Funny, when I received the email, I clicked the link immediately to check it out, and Pinterest was not responding. So they were a little overwhelmed last week when they rolled this out, but it seems like it's all working smoothly now. And I guess the only thing that's quasi-beta about it is that you don't have unlimited secret boards. They gave you 3 on your account, and that's all that you can have for now. And I think the blog post alluded to we're starting with 3 secret boards for each account. So in the future, I'm guessing they'll expand that.
Interesting. Okay.
So, yep. And then, Martin, you had some news and tech, an article that you came across that you wanted to share as well.
Yes. Now I got to find it. I think I've lost it.
Well, I have the link up. How about I share my screen again? And you can talk about it. It is a new release.
Yes, there is a new Chromebook out. And actually, let me forward this over here. It's from Acer. And this is going to tie in nicely to what we're going to do after this. But a new 11.6-inch Chromebook for $199, which is the lowest Chromebook price to date. So we're really getting into an area where I think there might be some possibilities for schools on a really tight budget to think about maybe getting Chromebooks in the hands of each of their students. One of the downsides, I think this is a little cheaper construction, and the battery life is not super good, super long. So it's, I think, 3.5 hours of battery life. So that'll get you through like a morning session or, you know, maybe a day if you're not using it, you know, end to end. But some of the other Chromebooks are twice that. And one that we're going to look at here in a minute is about twice that. So that's one of the downsides. But there's a little give and take on the price. So it's I think there is definitely good news here on the education front where schools might look at this as being pretty attractive and a place that they can now go to where they in the past would be challenged to kind of find budget room for a device that was more than this. So that's the new Acer Chromebook. That's the Acer C7 Chromebook. And I think it's available immediately.
Yep, available today. It says it boots in 18 seconds. Yep. You got to love that Chromebook startup time.
Yep.
All right. So we are going to go with the Chromebook theme here because you have some more Chromebook news to share with us. But before we do that, I think we have a little video that we wanted to share as well.
We can do that. That I have up. That I was ready for. So let me go over here. And our audio listeners are going to, you're going to have to describe this to our audio listeners at the end here, Sally.
Sure. So it's pretty quick. It's called a Wellstech Saga. And it was created with something that Ted Klug shared with us called the Gone Google Story Builder. So audio listeners will just hear the music.
It's not long.
That'll do it. Again, Ted Klug tweeted a link. It's called the Gone Google Story Builder, and it allows you to type out a conversation, basically, and it simulates it as a collaborative Google Doc, which is something you can do with Google Docs. You can be logged in with another user and work on the same document by typing in it at the same time. So it kind of, it demonstrates how Google Docs works collaboratively. And I went over to play with it this morning, and I actually typed out a pretend conversation between me and Martin about a podcast planning session. You know, what are we going to talk about? And Martin says he has a new gadget that he recently purchased. And so, and he's not telling what it is, but he's going to do an unboxing. This whole unboxing concept is new to me, but I have seen a couple of them. I guess it's kind of a trend now, or a meme in videos that people describe a new gadget or whatever they're getting as they unbox it and kind of show what's in the box and what materials come with it and things like that. And Martin, you have a new gadget to unbox this morning.
Yeah, unboxings are very geeky, very trendy, especially for those people that have maybe ordered something and don't have it yet, so they can't wait to see what it's going to look like when they get it, which is extremely geeky. But this, there is some method to the madness here, and this is related to that Chromebook news and tech article that we started with, $199 Chromebook, because about a month ago, Samsung introduced another Chromebook, which was $249, so a little bit more than the $199. But the neat thing about this one is it's a little bit bigger, a little bit faster, and has a little bit bigger screen. And a longer battery life. So I think there's definitely application here for classroom. So I wanted to get one and try that out in that kind of configuration. So I thought, well, I got it just the day before I left, I think, for Hong Kong maybe. And so I haven't actually opened it. So I figured, well, why don't we just open it on the show and take a look at it? Because I think there are going to be some interested schools in this product. So that's what we're going to attempt. So again, for our audio listeners, you won't actually see this, so we'll describe it as we go along. But I think there'll be some value. So I'm going to turn the camera around, and hopefully I'm going to show a clean desk. What I'm showing here is, let me turn this around here. And our listeners have actually seen this before. This is, turn it just a little bit more. This is the first Chromebook that was out. So this is from Samsung. This is the white model. And this actually is very nice as well. When I went to Grace in Oshkosh, this is the model that they had in the hands of all of their students. And I believe this one was like $400 at the time. So a little bit pricier. The construction is pretty good. One thing maybe you can't see on the screen here, and you definitely can't see it if you're just listening, a little bit different keyboard. So you've got the regular keys, but a couple of things have changed. Across the top, you don't have the function keys, but you have keys specific to a browser. And the thing about a Chromebook is that when you load it up, really all you have is the computer and a browser, the Chrome browser. So these keys across the top are things like the backwards and forward and refresh button and full screen button, and you have your audio buttons and those kinds of things, and a power button. Another thing about Chromebooks, and I think one thing that makes them very useful for classroom setting, is they're quiet, so there's no fan in them, and they're very quick. As you mentioned, Sally, with the Acer, there's a quick startup time, and I'm just looking at the features page for the Chromebook that I'm about to unbox here, and one of the big features is get started without the setup. It says Chromebooks require almost no setup, so you can go from unboxing, which is what we're going to do, unboxing to doing in minutes. So unlike other computers, you don't need to spend hours installing patches and software, which is a huge win for a school administrator, just opening these things up and getting them going right away without having to do a lot of management. So that's what we're going to do. So I've got the box here, and this happens to be from Samsung as well. So I haven't even actually taken the tape off. So just to prove that, this is an original. So we're going to test their claim whether we can go from unboxing to setup in minutes. So, Sally, you should be timing this.
Hey, I've got a stopwatch on my iPad. I'll give it a try.
Okay. So we're going to open this up.
I've been timing.
They're very well packaged. You know, they come in foam so that they're protected. So as you can see, there's not much to it. And this is actually, I think, a little bit more compact than the one that I just was talking about, the original Chromebook. So there is the Chromebook itself. Again, it's from Samsung, and you can kind of see the width, very skinny, very light. I think it says it was 2 pounds, something like that. It doesn't come with any discs, just a quick start guide. And the only other thing in the entire box is probably going to be a VGA or an HDMI cable. I don't remember which one this comes with. And a power cord, of course. So let's open up the accessory box here. And yeah, just the power brick, power cable, and not even a VGA adapter on this one. So that must be extra. So you can see that here. So I'm going to actually open this up, and we're going to see how quickly this thing starts.
So it's already got a charge on it.
It should. If not, we're going to find out. If not, I'm going to have to plug it in quick. And I may have to plug it in quick. Let me see if my other plug works on this one. Nope. That would have been too easy. So we will have to unwrap the power cable.
You're at a minute and a half now.
Okay. Now I feel the pressure, Sally.
Yeah.
So the one thing I like about the other one is the cable is very long. I don't think this one is quite as long. But in a classroom setting, what you're going to do is have this in some kind of cart where you have power strips attached to it, and you're going to you're going to be able to just plug these in. So let's see. Now I got to find where the power goes. It's on the back.
What else is back there?
By the way, on the back, you've got a number of jacks. This comes with USB 3, so that's an upgrade, which is a lot faster connector. So there's a USB 2 and a USB 3, so you're going to be able to transfer data or use an external hard drive if you want. Since there's only 16 gigabyte flash memory on here, you're going to need something if you want to store movies or whatever. Also on the back here, you have a micro SD card reader and an HDMI slot. So you can use a regular HDMI cable to hook this up to a monitor or a projector. So I've got one end plugged in here. Let's see how far this will stretch. And this is really good radio, isn't it, Sally?
I'm excited. And there is Martin's plug. Woohoo!
Okay, there it goes. I plugged it in. So it's starting up. Maybe you can't see this real well, so I'll turn the camera just a little bit. So it starts with the Chrome screen, and there's probably just some quick setup. So we'll see if it goes from unboxing to doing in minutes. So far, all I see is the Chrome screen.
According to my timer, you started right around 3 minutes with this. So, and you did some explaining there, so that's pretty quick.
Okay, so now I'm seeing the desktop.
30 seconds.
Okay. This does have, so it's asking for keyboard selection. And it's going to ask me to select a network. So I'm going to select a network that I see. I'm going to type in the password, if I can remember it. So I've typed in the password to our local network in the Senate administration building.
There's a little bit of glare. If you could tilt it just a little. There you go. We're seeing a little bit more now.
Yep. I didn't type it in correctly. Just a minute. Hopefully this will work. Yep. We may have a problem here.
Want me to shoot it to you in chat? Nope.
I know what it is. I think the problem is we have a secret SSID, which is probably a good idea for a local network, and it was probably picking up the wrong one here. So let me just type this in. Now I think we'll get it going. We'll give it one last chance. That looks promising. And now we hit continue.
Tilt it a little more for us.
Sorry.
There you go.
And we can accept the optional help make Chrome OS better by sending in reports. One thing that it will do usually is do automatic updates, which is actually a good thing because the administrator doesn't really have to do that. So whenever there are updates and you have access to the internet, like it needs to have to function, you are going to get the update automatically. So this says system update available, preparing to download. So it's going to download that. So we may actually want to come back. So hold the you know, hold the phone, and we'll come back to this once it downloads the update.
So, Martin, I guess I have a question. You mentioned the administrator account, and I know in a school setting, that's the power of this, that you can administer all of these, push out rules and things like that to all of the computers on your domain or whatever. But if a person wanted this for an individual computer, they wouldn't have to be part of a school domain or something like that. Is that correct?
Right. Either way. So an individual user could do this, although I'm not sure that this would be a primary machine for an individual user. It's probably not quite as powerful as you'd need it to be, and some of the apps you know, may not be available to you that you would normally expect on a regular laptop.
Sure.
So I think the application here is going to be more in the school setting, and you would need a Google Apps account, which is free, Google Apps for Education account. So you have to apply for that. And a number of our schools have done that. And you don't need to have Chromebooks to be able to sign up for Google Apps. You can use that regardless. So once you've got the Apps account, then you can basically register, or what they call enroll, Chromebook in the Google Apps account, and then you have total control over what comes onto the machine for individual users. And that's kind of the neat thing. It's not by machine, it's by login. So if you've got a third grader using the machine one day, you can have certain apps available to them that you install through the Chrome Web Store, and you can have certain extensions and shortcuts and those kinds of things to different links. But then if the next day it's in the sixth grade classroom and a sixth grader logs in, it can be a completely different experience for them. And you can set that up through the Google Apps account. And the administrator could do it by grouping different kids into different grades and saying, well, the sixth graders get this and the third graders get that. You can also set up accounts for faculty or super users or special needs or whatever it is, and then customize the experience. And then because these are totally portable and based on your login, it's a unique experience.
That's really cool.
It is really cool
for schools. I mean, just kind of unlocking and breaking down barriers with an affordable machine that's so versatile and easy to replace. Also, if something goes wrong, your data's not on the machine. You just boot up a different machine, basically, and your data is all in the cloud and accessible, exactly the same experience on a different machine.
Now, for the education devices, I don't know if it's the $249.99 or not. It might be a little bit less, but you also have to pay a $30 upfront fee to get it as a part of your Google Apps account. So that allows the maintenance that we just talked about to go on. So there's that registration fee, but that's a one-time only.
And that lasts for 3 years?
Right. That's a 3 year. So it's basically $10 a year. So it's a pretty reasonable cost to get it connected to that account. And then the warranty that comes along with this. So if something breaks down or whatever and you can't fix it, they'll just send you another one and you can send this back. So that also makes the life of an administrator a lot easier than having to troubleshoot and take a computer apart or, you know, go through a more strenuous warranty process, where this is, because there's no data on the device. It's really simple just to ship back, get a new one, and you're right where you started before. So it's good that way. So I've got less than a minute left on this update. So it's updating to the latest version of the operating system. So, Sally, while we're waiting for this, why don't we hear your pick?
Oh, great. I'm ready for that. I actually came across a really cool tool in some of my blog reading this week that I wanted to share with everybody. And it's from the Wikipedia website. So this is probably more than anything else, and I think I shared the wrong screen. Sometimes it flips on me right at the last second. More than anything else, it's applicable for teachers who want to share articles from Wikipedia. And what it allows you to do is combine articles or select different articles, and maybe you just want one, and create a print version of it, basically. And I found this hidden away on any Wikipedia page in the left navigation. There's a link that says print and export. and you can use the, what's called the book creator. If you haven't enabled it, the link would say enable book creator. And once you enable it, then the page transforms. And at the top of the page, it says book creator, and you can add a page to your book. And so basically I brought up the Wells article on Wikipedia and I said, add this page to my book. And right now the book just has one page, but I also have the Martin Luther College article up on Wikipedia. And I think if I refresh, the book creator links will be showing there for me and I can add that page to my book. And then if I want to show my book, I can go in, I can give my book an article, like maybe I'd call it Wells Articles. Call it Wells Articles, and I could give it a subtitle if I wanted. I can decide how to organize my different book pages, moving them around or clicking to sort alphabetically or whatever I want. And then I can actually get a print version of the book, and I have different options. I can get a PDF version. I can get what's called open document format or a Quicks open Zim format or an EPUB format.
Oh,
so
cool.
Basically an electronic version of my book. I'll go ahead and click to do PDF, but I also have the ability if I want to actually have the book printed in print format and shipped to me. So lots of different options there. But if I just want to share an electronic version, there's all those options and it comes up and allows me to download the file. Just takes a moment, formats it for me. It has the contents of the book. It has the different
contents.
Different references and licenses and things like that. And so you basically get the Wikipedia article. If there are images, those are included in the ebook. And, you know, the description of the images and things like that floats off to the side. And then any other links and things that were included, notes and references are all included. And the external links are spelled out there and things like that. And then it moves into the next article and the pictures and links associated with those. When you get to the end, there's a article sources and contributors page, which just kind of summarizes in really tiny font all the different sources of the things in the article. There's a link with all the image resources and links to all the different images and sources of those. And then there's a page with Creative Commons licensing. And it all is basically packaged together in a really neat looking book for you, which you could distribute to a class or whatever your needs may be. So I thought it was a really cool find on the Wikipedia website, just kind of available there, and I never knew about it. There's a help page about how to do it with a step-by-step guide. So we'll make sure and have all those links in the show notes.
Very cool. I love that. I can see a lot of applications in the classroom for that kind of thing where you're basically building. I assume you're limited to Wikipedia pages, but you're basically being able to build a resource, a reference library or book based on, you know, certain articles that you select. And, you know, you can print that out. You can, I suppose, put that online or do whatever you want with it as a resource for your kids or your class.
Right. Custom textbook. I would think from high school on up through college level, it could be really well used. Mm-hmm. So
cool.
Good stuff there.
Okay.
So how's your Chromebook doing?
It's ready for me to input my information. It was done shortly after we turned it over. So let me flip back here so we can finish the process. And that process is really just as simple as logging in. Once it did the update, it comes up with a Google login. So obviously this is a Google account that you need to log in with. So you have to have that. And I'm actually, the Senate actually has a Google account. So I'm just going to use that and see if we can get this set up. And one of the advantages of having a Google account, whatever computer you go to, it will synchronize, you know, bookmarks and extensions that you have. So let me log in with that account. Let's go ahead and sign in. See what happens. It asks you to pick a picture. So I'm going to pick this cute little puppy here. and then it gives you some help screens that you can easily close. But now this is it. So this is the desktop. So it was really that easy. I just had to install the updates. I had to log in. That's all it asked for. Oh, I had to select a wireless network, apply the update, and then provide it my Google login. So I'm now at my desktop. So if I went into Gmail, for instance, I would see all of my email for that account, and it knows who I am. So there's all my emails. If I close that, I could go into my Google Drive. So all my files that are stored there, you know, would be listed there. Or if I went into just the browser, you'll know you probably can't see this real well on the screen here, but across the top, it has now imported all of my bookmarks from all my, from my Google sessions. So what I had on my regular computer are now available here, and I can click on any of those and go to those accounts just as if I had, been on my other computer. So very cool. So just a quick rundown of the hardware itself. Again, there's a jack for headphone and microphone. There's an SD card that you can put in there. I mentioned the things on the back. Just to compare it maybe to the other one, it's a little shorter, so you can see that maybe it's an inch and not as deep. It's about the exact same width, and it's also slimmer, and it weighs quite a bit less. So it's a lot lighter weight. So this is maybe something that it's going to depend on the school how they want to do this. You know, whether they want to let the kids take this home or not. The schools that I talked to that are using this, and there are probably four or five now in the center that are doing this, actually don't let the students take the Chromebooks home, primarily for one reason, because if they have a computer at home, they have access to the exact same files just by logging in with their Google account. So they're going to have the same desktop on their home that they would using a Chromebook that they had in school. Again, one of the biggest advantages I see for something like this in a classroom setting is the speed at which they can open it up. So I just close this. If I open this up again, it's going to start up right where I left off. Or if I were logged in, it would just logged off. It would ask for a login, and it would boot up within 3-4 seconds, and I'd have all the data that I had before. So it does not disrupt the educational process at all, which is really of great benefit. So
tell me how sturdy it feels, Martin. Does it feel plasticky? It's such an inexpensive price.
It does feel light and a little bit plasticky, although I'm not going to do a drop test on it. So I wouldn't do that. But the screen quality, looks good. Looks about the same as the other one. I mean, it's not going to be equivalent to... I can turn the brightness up a little bit. So it's not going to be the equivalent of a higher end notebook or a MacBook or something like that. But the keyboard is kind of that chiclet style keys that a lot of computers have. It seems responsive. Seems like the trackpad is moves around nicely. But there's really nothing in here. It's RAM. There's no physical hard disk. So it's just chips that are in here. There's no fan that runs. So that's why you can get the good battery life out of it as well. So again, it's not going to take, a lot of beatings. You're not going to be able to drop it off a desk a few times and, have it survive. I don't think, but again, with good care, at least the feedback we've been getting from the schools that have been using it, that, it's durable enough, and at the price tag that we're talking about here, $249 or for the Acer, $199, I think it's probably pretty good value.
Absolutely. Wow. Okay. It's quite the potential for our educating our young people into the future.
Yeah. So I guess 10 minutes from unboxing to getting to work, especially with that update, which took a little bit longer because it had to download and then install and reboot. But other than that, to start using one of these from a dead stop is 10 seconds. So
wow, amazing.
Cool. and no configuration. I didn't have to install anything for the kids to use. I didn't have to put Microsoft Word or something on there. Google Docs is available. Those kinds of things are all kind of built in. Obviously, the disadvantage is you have to be online, so you have to have a reliable network.
Okay. So that is officially your pick of the week. Is that my understanding?
I like it. I think the quality is about what I expected. And definitely for the price, I think there's great potential, especially with like a USB 3 port here. You can plug in a pretty high speed external drive, get all the storage you need, and you're good to go.
Awesome.
That is my pick of the week.
Well, I'm excited for my first official unboxing. That was a thrill.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to have the next one then.
Oh, good. What tech is in my future?
That's right. So next time the UPS guy drives up, don't unbox it. So.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know about that.
A little self-control.
Yeah.
We've got another Coral Fest we want to announce, Sally.
That's right. This is in my near future because this weekend is the West Regional Coral Fest, and it's happening at West Lutheran High School of all places. How appropriate, huh? Their theme is Praise the Lord for His Mighty Works, and I know last week's was a grand success. I'm sure this one will be as well. Again, they are broadcasting Friday evening Pops concert at 7 p.m. on the 16th, and then a Sunday sacred concert at 2:30 p.m. on November 18th. So tune in. You can get to that on the Wells website by going under Streams Media for the live schedule, and the links will all be there.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Sally, we should remind everybody about our 7 Best series, which is going to be coming up the first or second week in December. That'll be our last 7 Best show. And we're going out in grand style. We're going to talk mobile computing tips, whether that's a 10-inch tablet, 7-inch tablet, even a notebook, phone, smartphone, you know, whatever it is, any tips that you have for maybe staying connected, apps that you use, things that keep your calendar tidy, cool tools, security, whatever it is, we're looking for your 7 best tips. And we don't need 7 from each person. We need just one good one from you. So let us know what those are. Lots of ways to get in touch with us. WellsTech.wells.net is the absolute best way to get all the information about all of our contact information is there at the top right of the screen. Pinterest first and foremost. So that's where we always look first. Google+, Facebook, Twitter. We have a listserv option there. You can send us a good old-fashioned email, wellstech@wells.net, or even a voicemail. So we'd love to play your voice on the show. So please do share with us one of your 7 best mobile computing tips.
Absolutely. Looking forward to that countdown. Maybe I'll have something new for Christmas for my device. Who knows?
Okay. Let's move on to community feedback.
And we have a good amount of feedback to share. Starting with a blog post I tagged from the Internet Toolbox for Churches blog. It's called 3 Pitfalls to Avoid When Creating a Church Website. And I could really relate. It says, if your church is thinking about a new website at present, or if you can recall when the website was still a gleam in someone's eye, I'm sure you know that there's lots of exciting ideas, but to make it really work is a lot of hard work. And so they give 3 tips. They want you to evaluate your site and see if it's too hard for you to use, because you can't expect someone else to use it if you can't make it work. Or if it's too hard to change as the needs change, that could be a real pitfall. Mm-hmm. Or if it doesn't deliver what you need to share for outreach and inreach within your own congregation. So some good food for thought in evaluating church websites.
Great.
Next up, we had some additional Digo links to share. One was double tagged, and Tom Rosenau found this article first.
Tom had it first, yes.
So he gets the credit. But Martin also tagged that you can get Photoshop Elements, and this is version 11, a brand new version of Photoshop Elements,
right?
For 50% off in November. And that is from the Costco website. and the current price on the Costco site is $49.99. And it's kind of funny because they talk about the regular price being $79 or being $100, but when you go to the site, it says the regular price is $79.99. So I don't know about the 50% off thing, but anyway, that's kind of splitting hairs. The bottom line is you can get it for $50, but that price is for people that are members of the Costco site. So if you're not a member of Costco, you can get it for $54. Now, I did some reading, additional reading, and in all the links and things, it said it was also available at Sam's Club for the same cost. And I happen to have a membership at Sam's Club, not at Costco. So when I saw the link come up, I went over to Sam's Club and I actually ordered myself a copy of this. I was excited to hear about this offer and the great pricing. But it's funny, I went back, that was on Saturday, so like 3 days ago. I went back today to get the Sam's Club link, and it is not available on Sam's Club any longer. So they must have sold out their portion of Photoshop Elements 11 at that price point, because they don't have it out there anymore. But it's still on Costco.
Right.
It says it's through November 25th or while supplies last. So I guess if they sell out, they're going to take down their offer as well. So if you're interested in a copy, you might want to hop over to the Costco site and grab it.
How can you sell out of software, Sally? Just make another copy.
Yeah, exactly. The other thing I wanted to make mention of was, as I knew my new software was coming, I went out to search my friend Lynda.com's website to see if she had any courses already available on Photoshop 11, since it's Photoshop Elements 11, since it's a new piece of software. And lo and behold, just published in September and another one in November. There's an up and running with Photoshop. Get a friendly, approachable introduction to Photoshop Elements 11, and that lasts for 2 hours and 45 minutes. And then there's a more in-depth course, go beyond the automatic editing features and learn about some of the sophisticated editing, and that course is 4 hours and 17 minutes long. So if you have a Lynda membership, or if you're interested in a nice gift for someone for Christmas, you might want to check out Lynda.com. Great training resources on all kinds of software and topics.
$25 a month.
So
Sally, I have to ask you, does this mean PicMonkey is going by the side of the road here?
I love my PicMonkey. I'm just going to get notched up a little bit, hopefully, with Photoshop. And I'm also a little bit motivated to go with the DSLR route, which I never have. But you and all your photo taking have made me look that way, too. So maybe I'll take some more.
Blame me. I don't want Kevin calling me saying, you know what Sally's buying now.
Yeah, I think there's some good deals in those Black Friday ads. So we'll see if I have an unboxing of my own coming up. We'll see. All right. A few more Digo links. One is called text2mindmap.com. Fits in our discussion earlier about mind maps. Looks like a really simple Web 2.0 tool for drawing mind maps. And they start with an example here, and you can play around with it and move things around. And I'm sure it's really easy to get started with.
I'm easily distracted by shiny new things like that.
Jason Schmidt tagged this. He said Kurt Gostek had pointed him to it. So lots of great techies out there. Jason also tagged a fun project you might want to check out for your classroom. And it is how to make a pizza box, chalkboard, and whiteboard easel. You guys are going to love this when you see it. It's a cardboard pizza box, and on one side they attached a piece of whiteboard contact paper. Apparently they sell this, and you can order it online if you can't find it in stores. So it's just a piece of contact paper. It even said you could use a white sheet of paper and a clear piece of contact paper to make a whiteboard. And the other side is actually contact paper that's chalkboard contact paper, which I didn't know existed either. But you can order that, or you could use chalkboard paint or whatever. And it kind of walks through how to create this on a cardboard pizza box. So I guess you got to make friends with the people at Little Caesars and get them to give you a clean box, hopefully, not one that had pizza in it. And at the end of the day, the students can fold it all up and put it away and use their pizza box again.
Look at that. So it's kind of like a personal little whiteboard, blackboard that they can have at their desk.
And,
and put all the materials inside when it's all folded up. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
They even have a do-it-yourself eraser made with a milk cap. So what a fun project. Jason, if you use this, you'll have to send us a picture of your students making use of it. I love it.
I love it too.
All right. From Twitter, I tweeted a link to a tech and learning article that I read, Top 100 Sites and Apps for 2012. And this is written by a blogger over at Tech and Learning named David Kapler. And he always writes some really great articles. So I was excited to see beginnings of top list for 2012, Martin. And we'll be inundated with all mm-hmm. kinds of top countdown list as the end of year approaches. But right off the bat, there were several that I'm not familiar with. And he said he makes it his criteria not to repeat top picks from the previous year. So this is going to be new stuff. Look at that. Number two is Pinterest. How exciting.
Yeah.
All right. So check out that list if you're looking for something new for classroom usage.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to make mention that our friend Leslie Bergman over at Good Shepherds in New Berlin, Wisconsin.
West Dallas.
Oh, you're right. West Dallas, Wisconsin. Didn't want to mess that up. Sorry. She wrote on our Facebook page that she is running Windows 8. So I am not surprised. Leslie is just kind of a cutting edge kind of gal like that. Mm-hmm. She's willing to try it. And she's also a serious Final Webber. She always gives us feedback on the Final Web tool set and has been responsible for lots of great improvements to the Final Web tool set based on her feedback.
Caught a lot of bugs and new features too. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And basically she's kind of reporting in that if you're a Final Web user and are cautious about going to Windows 8, that it works just great in Windows 8. And also the website displays well in Internet Explorer 10.
Which is what comes along with Windows 8. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Internet Explorer 10. I just heard Windows 7 is getting Internet Explorer 10 as well. I thought it was even today. So you may want to, maybe there's some news on the wire about that too.
Okay. She did mention that the only issue she had so far is she has something linked that opens up in a new window. And apparently opening up in a new window forced the Windows 8 to take action. They have to take action to be able to display it in desktop mode or something like that. So I don't have Windows 8, but apparently the Windows 7 desktop is still there. And somehow this connection was causing them to launch that Windows 7 desktop mode. Okay. So we'll have to play with that some. That sounds like it's workable, but we'd like to make that smooth for Final Web users as well. She does say she likes having the security of being able to go back to the Windows 7 desktop. So if Windows 8 isn't making much sense at some point, you can always revert back. So, but really appreciate, Leslie, you sharing your experience there.
Very good.
And then one more website I wanted to make mention of. And that is a blog I found, and this is from one of our Wells Tech listeners, Kurt Gosdick, who's a third and fourth grade teacher at St. Lucas in Keewaskum, and he is getting into the blogging arena with Pushing Ahead on the 21st Century Technology Path. And it looks like he's just getting started here, but he had a recent blog post with a slide deck of Web 2.0 tools for teachers that I thought was really worthy. And I just like finding these blogs and being able to start to follow some of our listeners, some of the people out in Wells Tech land that are actually feet on the ground kind of people doing these technology things. Kurt was on our show a year or so ago talking about the netbook experience at his school, St. Lucas in Keewaskum, with his class. They all had gotten netbooks. And so we know he's out there fighting the good fight and doing technology one-on-one in his classroom. And now we'll have a chance to follow his blog and hopefully keep it up with what's going on with Kurt. So I think that will do it for our community feedback.
Very good. Thanks to everybody. Lots of opportunities to share what you know with us and with everybody else. We enjoy that part of the show the most.
Definitely.
Next week, Thanksgiving week. So short week, but we will be doing a show, and we'll be doing something that you may want to listen to before you go on, you know, that extended weekend, because we're talking about PC maintenance. So what better time to do that, especially you guys that don't want to go out on the Black Friday stuff. You can spend the time at home doing a little cleanup on the computer. So we're going to talk about things to consider when you're doing PC maintenance. We're going to ask one of my staff here in the Senate office, Dan Rebers, who we haven't had on the show before, to come on. He's our information services director and deals with our help desk and all kinds of PC support issues for all of our staff here. And he will have some things to say about how to keep your hard disk clean and practice safe computing as well. So you'll want to tune in next week for our conversation with Dan and PC maintenance. And we may even throw in some Mac stuff too.
So oh my goodness.
You won't want to miss that. So.
Well, I think you need it before Thanksgiving, because it's not just your computers, but when you visit relatives, you end up doing maintenance on theirs as well.
So. Another reason to listen.
Good timing.
Yes, very good. So we think ahead here on the Wells Tech Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Let's close the show with the music of L.A. Miller, Your Peace. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. I'm going to go play with my Chromebook, and we hope to talk with all of you next week. Thanks for joining us today. Bye. My sin.